welcome to Write Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Women of Wasps and War, The Sting of Justice, a new historical fantasy novel by Madeline Diest. Women of Wasps and War is a grim and gripping tale of power and politics, love and honour, men and women, the old ways and the new. Women of Wasps and War is now available on Amazon and Kindle Unlimited. Hello and welcome to Write Through the Roof. I'm Madeline Diest and today I'm speaking with R.R. Campbell. Hi Ryan, how are you going?
I'm doing pretty well, Madeline. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Might be a bit nasal though, so it's hay fever season here in Melbourne, so it's a bit spring, so hopefully I don't sound too snuffly. But anyway, a bit of an introduction about R.R. Campbell. He is an author, writing coach, and podcaster. He is the founder of the Writescast Network, a podcast collective for writers by writers. His first science fiction novel, Imminent Dawn, debuted at number one in its Amazon category. And the second book in his empathy series, Mourning Dove, is out now. Thanks again for sparing a few moments to have a chat with me today, Ryan.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me on the show. I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. So, how I like to start is a few warm-up questions to get us limbered up and in the mood. Okay, so the age-old question, are you a plotter or a pantser?
I can say that I am mostly a plotter, but I am a bit of a hybrid. I will trust my gut once in a while if I feel like, oh, the story's pulling me a different direction or a character's pulling me a different direction. I will deviate and dabble in that space for a bit, but I am very much a, even down to the scene level, outliner before I even write a word of any novel. So I heavily go one way, but I'm willing to be, as you say, limber and flexible, as we are getting limber and flexible with these warm-up questions.
Do you have to spend quite a bit of time plotting out before you even write a single word?
I do. That isn't to say that I might have, for example, the first line of the novel in my head or an idea of what the first few paragraphs are going to look like. Maybe I write those down and see what shape they take on the page, but I am pretty meticulous in how I outline, including looking at what plot structure is going to be best for the novel in question, then throwing what I think are going to be the best plot points to match up with how that structure would generally play out. And then I start filling in the space between with those scene by scene outlines. And then I've got the story in front of me. And every morning when I wake up, I know exactly what it is I'm getting myself into that day.
Interesting. It's funny how everyone's quite different in that respect, isn't it?
It really is, and that's something that I'm learning more and more as I engage with writers in a more professional capacity, as I've started to get into writing instruction through the University of Wisconsin here, and having a chance to kind of talk to them about the approach that I take to the page and see what it is that's going to perhaps empower them to feel more confident, like I can have that confidence when I get up in the morning, and then seeing also what they say is maybe too restrictive for them or maybe isn't the best path. And then they find their own ways to adapt it for their own creative mind and what it is that they see for their project. And it's nice to see this sort of cloned approach getting out into the world with its own set of perhaps genetic mutations here and there that people have instilled into making it happen. It's a very sci-fi take, I know, but that's the first thing that came to mind there.
I'm going to go off on a segue here, but it's interesting that, you know, writing is seen as a creative, you know, kind of in quotation marks endeavor. And yet there are people like yourself and like me as well who are very analytical and find a way to bring that to their writing as well.
I would agree with that. And I think that in my case, that sort of analytical view of how writing can come together is based on my background in the world of linguistics. I come from actually the science side of language, which might sound surprising to listeners who are always used to thinking about this idea of the language arts, so to speak, or like an English class, for example. But there really is a lot to be said for the underlying structure that's at the foundation of all human language and the many different shapes and iterations that it takes on the surface. And in the same way, I try to be very deliberate and analytical about deeper structural matters in my writing. But when it comes time to actually get words on the page, I think that is where the real art side of it comes in. So creating that sort of dual vision for what is ultimately going to be something that a reader holds in their hand and experiences as a single body of work, they might not be aware of that deeper structure that's in there or the care that went into crafting that. But I like to think that they still can experience it in the same way that we, in having this conversation, are just going about and looking at the subject matter of the words, but we're not thinking about what our brain is necessarily doing or our mouth is necessarily doing to facilitate the speech itself.
Wow, fascinating. That could be a whole another conversation, but let's bring
it back. You know, we should bring it back to that at some point. That would be a good one.
Back to the warm up questions. So do you have any writing rituals once you've got your spreadsheet out and you're ready to go?
I do, in fact, have a writing ritual, and my writing ritual starts the night before I actually do any writing. And that is when I bring a coffee mug from the kitchen up to the office bathroom here, where I have a little coffee maker stowed away, and I will go ahead and get the coffee maker set to go off at 5:25 in the morning. And then at 5:30 a.m., I am up, and by 5:40, I am, as you say, with the spreadsheet open, I've got my outline in front of me, my hands are on the keys, and I am drinking that coffee. That is my daily ritual where it comes to writing.
Wow. I've heard about people doing that for exercise, like having their gym equipment just by the side of the bed so that they just get up and go. But yeah. So the coffee machine's like programmable for timing.
Yeah, I have it programmed to go off, like I say, 5:25, and it's the perfect amount of time. It took much, analysis, again, and some experimentation to figure out what time do I need to set the coffee maker to so that when I walk into the room and actually grab the pot, it's still not doing its drip. It's ready to go, and I can just go straight to the pour and then take that pour to the desk. So it's very – I think the reason that it developed this way is because – my philosophy was that if I were going to write and have a clear head, I needed to do it before anything could throw that off. And so naturally, I wanted to do it in the morning, but I also wanted to make sure that I wasn't completely zombified when I actually sat down at the keyboard. So I need everything to be a nice, smooth transition from rolling out of bed and maybe throwing on a sweatshirt as it starts to get colder here now before I get to the office. But once I'm there, it's just there's no Twitter, there's no email, I don't check any of that before I start writing. It's, all right, I've got Scrivener open, the coffee is here, the time has come.
Beautiful. So this leads into one of the favorite questions of, we've talked about coffee, so that's obviously your writing fuel of choice. So black?
Yes, I do straight black. I don't have time for a creamer or anything like that. It's just pour and go for it.
Yeah, you're a man of my own heart.
There it is. Yeah, it's black coffee. And then on writing fuel, you know, I figure that a lot of people do say coffee or they have tea or things of that nature. But I also find that where writing fuel is concerned, especially if I'm feeling stuck, maybe not in terms of not knowing what comes next, because I, of course, have that outline there. But if I feel like the writing itself is getting stale, I will at night incorporate into my routine going back to a favorite book of mine by an author that I know I've particularly enjoyed or found to be an inspiration, and I'll reread that book or I'll pick up a new book by them and start to try to process their approach to the page or try and get some insight into it and just let the words kind of happen. And I find that that can actually be really effective writing fuel the next day, because I think some of that can kind of stick with you and you can feel like, all right, I have something to aspire to now that isn't just putting down this cup of coffee and making sure that I, you know, drink it quickly enough to not fall asleep at the keyboard.
Mm. Oh, fantastic. Okay, well, it sounds like we've definitely got to know you a bit better. So let's talk a little more about your writing. rather than the process necessarily. So how do you describe your writing, and what particular themes do you like to explore?
Where my writing is concerned, and I think this is probably the case for many authors, whether they realize it or not, but I like to always be working toward that ultimate goal of empathy between my characters and between my readers. And so however that needs to manifest on the page is the approach I'm going to take. And that might seem kind of silly, because what are we doing if not just putting words down on paper? Is there anything really to it that's beyond that? And I think that there really is, because when we can start thinking about what our goals are, we can then start tailoring how we want to present those words to readers. And I'm getting into this notion of using more epistolary forms of storytelling. So I have no problem in the middle of writing, if it's going to be more effective to convey a particular part of a story through a series of emails, as opposed to using paragraphs to describe the transition of transmission of information, I will go ahead and slide right into giving you a run of emails or text messages. Or I'm experimenting now in the third book of my empathy series. I'm experimenting with actually putting something that looks like computer programming in the book and trying to find ways to keep that accessible so that people can read what it is that these machines are, quote unquote, thinking in the most direct way possible. And so I'm getting a little bit experimental with some of that stuff, but I think that it all comes down to finding the best way to build empathy between the character whose point of view we are with and the reader that I want to find ways to relate to the character in question. So I know that was a little processed. Does that feel fair insofar as just describing the writing in general?
Sure. But you've made me start to think about how, yeah, the text message or the code coming in to novels these days is obviously just the way that technology is moving, and it makes total sense. You know, you think of your Victorian novel that's full of letters. Well, of course, today we communicate via text message or, as you said, code. So it makes total sense to incorporate that in our writing.
And that's a really good point that you make there as well about the historical evolution of the relationship between people and not only what they're reading, but people and the other modes of communication that exist alongside what it is that they are reading. And that ties really nicely, actually, into what I planned on mentioning for theme and the themes that I explore. Mm. Because ultimately, for me, what I'm doing with this empathy sci-fi saga is exploring the relationship to our technology, yes, and how our relationship to our technology affects our relationships with other people. But at the end of the day, for me, technology in this series is just a stand-in for any obsession or innovation or dream that kind of takes hold and becomes the zeitgeist of any given era. You know, in my particular series, it just happens to be an internet access brain implant by the name of empathy. And that is the proxy for this obsession, innovation, or dream that we then explore over the course of the book, using not only these classic sci-fi tropes, which I think are going to underlie anything that falls under sci-fi. It's part of how we define genre, is by the tropes that it uses, but by making it about love. And that is also really what lies at the heart of this story. And one reviewer actually, I was so glad I stumbled into this review. It was actually posted a couple of months ago over on Amazon, but this reviewer mentioned that all the characters are driven, yes, by how this technology is affecting them, but the decisions that they ultimately make are about a love that they bear for someone who's near to them, or a love for a version of themselves that they have not yet attained. And so you have this love that is underlying all the decision-making that characters are making in their own right, but it's taking shape on the surface through this technology. And again, we have technology as the proxy for these deeper human wants and needs.
Mm, wow, that sounds really interesting.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
All right, so moving on to the big question I like to ask. So what is the one thing that you think has been most helpful in improving your writing?
I think the most helpful thing for me has been developing a strong sense of intra-scene structure, because there is so much emphasis on these broader plot structure formats that people might try to use the sort of plug and play where you say, okay, what's going to work for this novel? Am I going to use the hero's journey? Am I going to use a 7-point structure? Do I want to use the story circle? But what a lot of that leaves to the wayside is looking at the mechanics of how our characters go about the equivalent of their day-to-day lives. And so developing a strong sense of how mechanics work from a storytelling perspective within a given scene has become, I mean, it transformed my writing so fundamentally that I cannot conceive of a time when I wasn't taking the particular approach that I found to the page that I currently am now.
All right. Tell me a little bit more about this.
I would love to. So this is, it's really become my bread and butter, not only in the writing world, but also in the world of teaching. It's really my flagship that I come back to time and time again. And this strategy is something that I stumbled into after doing my own independent study of structure and also courses through the University of Wisconsin's Continuing Studies Division, which I'm now also just happen to be teaching through. So between them, talking with other writers and just trying to tap into what works for folks led me to realize that, in my view, there are 5 core components to any scene. And those 5 components are setting, goal, conflict, resolution, and then the 5th core component can be viewed as either a cliffhanger, a change moment, or a pivot point. And I could go on for hours about this, but the basic principles.
I presume you've got a course about it.
I do, in fact, have a course about it. I'm putting the final touches for the online version up now. So, folks. Yeah, so I'll get into the details of that later, but for the moment, just to kind of flesh it out a little bit more, the idea is that when we talk about setting, we're talking about the when and where. It's really important for readers to come to the page with some sort of context, some sort of foundation through which they're going to be able to understand where they are. We need to be oriented. We don't want to leave readers in the dark about something as basic as where our characters are and what time of day or year or of a character's life that it is. Then we have goal. This is the goal that our character will have to try to accomplish within that given scene. And incorporating this goal provides a really strong sense of momentum, and it helps keep readers, characters, and us as writers all on the same page, both, you know, literally and figuratively. Then we have a conflict. That's the thing that's going to try to stop or obstruct our character from achieving the goal in question. There's a resolution where the goal conflict tug of war is resolved. And then we get into this final component, which is a cliffhanger. And that's something where our character or their world is left in some sort of mortal peril. We have a change moment, which can be the final beat of a scene where our character experiences, or readers are left to believe our character is experiencing, some sort of internal character change. And then we have these pivot points where readers are left with a sense of, oh, well, now that we saw this goal conflict tug of war play out, we know what the outcome for that was. We can start making predictions about what our character is going to do next plot-wise. And in this way, we're set up immediately for our next scene with suggestions of what our character's goal might be, what their new attitudes might be. And we can even start to get a sense of when and where they will be in that next scene. And it helps guide readers through the story in what I think is a really smooth way, and helps them keep their bearings throughout while maintaining some interest and momentum.
Fantastic. Okay, well, when we wrap up, we'll talk a bit more about how listeners might be able to learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you spoke before about going back to writers that you admire to inspire you for your writing fuel. So let's talk a little bit more about your favorite writers. Who do you like to read and why?
So I will flag 2 writers here in particular, those being Margaret Atwood and David Mitchell. I think Margaret Atwood is probably, a lot of folks would say, oh yeah, of course, Margaret Atwood. She's very good at what she does, of course. She just won, what was it, the Booker Prize. Yeah. Again, she was the co-winner of that this year. But her Mad Adams series, which I think is one not as many people have read, is to me just a beautiful case study in what you can do with some less traditional storytelling mechanics. And by that, I mean, every book follows a different character from the standpoint of point of view. So in book one, we're with a character named Jimmy/Snowman. Mm-hmm. Book two, we have these two women that we're following, but the events of book two are concurrent to the events of book one, and these two women are just in a different place. Book three, we're with those two women, but also this third character, Zeb, and it is the way that she chose to tell this story, I think, is really beautiful, because it's not just saying, well, we need to stick with our quote-unquote primary protagonist. It would be kind of like if J.K. Rowling decided that, all right, well, Harry Potter is who this series is really about, but for every book, we're going to get to see Harry Potter's story from a different person's viewpoint. Mm-hmm. I don't think that would have made sense for that series, but for this particular Matt Adams series with Margaret Atwood, it really does, and it tells just this wonderful haunting tale at the same time about what it is that humans do in a sort of post-apocalyptic, climate change stricken and genetic manipulation stricken world. So I really appreciate Margaret Atwood for that and for her poetry as well. But we have David Mitchell then too. Most people probably know Cloud Atlas. That was I think a masterclass in multi point of view storytelling. Again, you can tell I really like that multiple point of view thing. But also books of his like Black Swan, Green, and even Bone Clocks. I think the writing is just really, really beautiful. And I love how he plays with time and occasionally incorporates elements of magic realism. I think really help keep you on your toes. And they help build a world that we eventually go on to see exists not only within the context of a single book, but all of his books are in some way connected by this world that he has built for himself as an author.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the Empathy series. So you did talk a bit about some of the technology behind it all, but what was the original inspiration? And were you trying something different? Maybe some of this multi-point of view that you were talking about just a second ago?
Yeah, so with the Empathy series, the original impetus for writing this was actually, it goes back, oh boy, probably 9 or so years by now when I got my first smartphone and I realized that it was kind of changing my approach to my day on a really fundamental level. And it slowly led to this idea of, okay, well, what would happen if and what will happen when we don't need this device to be outside of us, when it just becomes part of us. And that led to this idea of the internet access brain implant. And from there, I started thinking, okay, well, it would probably do X, Y, and Z for people. It would probably have, A, B, and C in terms of disadvantages as well. Let's, play around in a world. We'll write a short story. And it started as a takeoff of Flowers for Algernon. And it was just supposed to follow a single character for, 10,000 words, what have you. But it quickly ballooned. And before I knew it, I was writing a novel that was going to have two characters, and that was the art school dropout Chandra. And then we were going to have our ruthless tech magnate Wyatt, who was running the study. And even that didn't feel like I was quite getting enough of a taste of the world. And so from there, we doubled the number of prospective characters to include our relentless investigative journalist, Meredith, who's trying to get a scoop about the dark happenings that are allegedly happening on this secretive empathy research compound. Mm-hmm. And then we've got our fourth perspective character in Imminent Dawn, which is the first book in the series. And she's sort of your everyday person. She is just an administrative assistant minding her own business, but she accidentally, quote unquote, may or may not have allowed a hacking collective to find its way onto the research compound. And that complicates things rather significantly. So that's kind of the primary thrust for that series and where it started. And I've only continued to add perspective characters since then. So it continues to balloon at this point.
Fantastic. So, and you're working on, or you're about to hand in number 3, is that right?
Yeah, so book 3 I am working on right now pretty feverishly. I thought I was in a really good place where having the foundations of the story completed was concerned, but I have learned now that I needed to do some retooling. And so I'm actually going through right now and really reshaping a few of the perspective characters based on feedback that I got from beta readers, but also based on some new elements that I want to incorporate in future installments of the book. So in future installments of the series, I should say. So we have Imminent Dawn was book one. We had Morning Dove, as you mentioned at the top of the conversation, and then we have Event Horizon, and that book will be out in 2020.
So how did you go about this retooling, as you say? Because I know that there's sometimes that feeling that, oh, it's done, and then that kind of depression when you realize, no, it's not done, and you know, the kind of feeling that you want to throw it all away, but you've got to get back on track and work out what you need to do. So do you have any tips on how to make sure that you push through right to the end?
I do. And I actually think that pushing right through to the end is something I have to keep in mind more broadly when I'm planning the timeline for a project. And by that, I mean, I have to build in time to not be pushing through to the end. So I reached a point where I submitted the third manuscript or the manuscript for the third book to my publisher. I did it early enough that it had enough of the story there that they could get a sense for it and know whether or not it was something they wanted to proceed with. And while that manuscript was away from me, I took time away from that manuscript. I didn't think about it at all. And I instead wrote a manuscript about cowboys and dinosaurs in Arizona in the year 1870. And so it was a completely different, more fun project. It was something that I could, you know, I don't have a contract on offer for this particular book. I had a lot of freedom to do whatever it is I wanted. It was about just finding the joy in writing and not maybe taking it as seriously, but knowing that, you know, someday I'll do something with this cowboys and dinosaurs book. But taking that time away, finding joy in a new project, and then while I was taking that time away, getting that initial project, this third book in the Empathy series, Event Horizon, getting it in the hands of beta readers and letting them have time to process the book, come back to you, collect that feedback, and then start thinking about, okay, well, I'm almost done writing this dinosaurs and cowboys book. Maybe it's time to start getting serious again and push through to this end, this deadline end that I have. And having taken that time away, I was able to sort of divorce myself emotionally from the work and some of the grief that, as you mentioned, can come with that at times, and really feel more free to look at the story and go, okay, I felt like I had to tell it this way. That was just me trying to push too hard to get to the end. And now that I might still have a deadline here looming, but I now can bring a new vision to it more confidently because I've got feedback from others now that either supports or contradicts what that vision might be. And I just want to find ways to meet readers in the middle while also telling the story that I want to tell. So it's a multidimensional approach, I suppose. You just got to do what's right for you, but you also have to do really what's right for the story at the end of the day, even if that means taking a break and making tough decisions sometimes about when it is that you actually want to be physically working on that book.
The reason why I laughed was multidimensional seems to be the theme of the conversation.
Yeah, I'm into that. It's multidimensional, multiple points of view. I'm sure there's going to be a third multiple thing that we stumble our way into before we're done here. So,
oh, well. Unfortunately, I need to wrap up. So,
well,
thank you so much, Ryan, for having a chat with me today. So if people want to find out more about you and all your different pieces of work that you're working on, where's the best place to find you online?
They can find me at rrcampbellwrites.com. That is where you can learn more about my writing endeavors and also some of those online writing courses. I'm sure you can subscribe to my newsletter and get new information about that as it comes along. And you can also find me over on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as I am RR Campbell. And there's a rightscast.net for all those Rightscast Network podcasts. You can add the Rightscast Network to your regular diet of podcast listening right along with Right Through the Roof here.
Oh, beautiful. Nice segue there. Yeah, nice promo.
Oh, thanks. I want to give you a shout out. Give me a shout out. We're all getting shout outs. Here it is. It's the third multiple shout outs.
Woo!
We did it.
Okay, fantastic. All right, we'll wrap up there. But thank you so much, Ryan. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Madeline. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Write Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?